Hello, and welcome to another edition of Sight into Sound Presents. In this edition, we are joined by Misty Highnote, who works for the Texas Department of Insurance in Austin. Whether we rent or own our homes, we are always concerned on whether or not we have adequate insurance to protect our home, the things we have in our home, and what protection we have if someone is hurt in our home, as well as the complex nature of mortgage, homeowners, and renters' insurance policies in general. We'll also touch on claims and insurance fraud. Misty is going to give us the information we need in order to better understand these types of insurance policies. I'm Max Maudy. Misty, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We certainly do appreciate you taking the time to do this and to discuss what is a subject that is, to some extent, actually mysterious and complex to a lot of people. We felt that perhaps discussing home insurance, whether we rent or own our home, might be something that would be a way to get into the area of insurance as opposed to Medicare, Medicaid, and other types of insurance, which we might discuss in another interview at another time. But today we're going to just try to concentrate and focus our discussion on homeowner's insurance, mortgage insurance, and all the things and issues that we need to consider when we buy the policy, you know, as to whether or not we got what we actually paid for, and the questions that we need to ask someone that may be trying to sell us a policy of this type. So, again, thank you for being here.
Yeah, you're welcome. Glad to do it.
Let's begin with respect to these insurance policies in general. Whether we rent a home or whether we own a home, are there certain issues in that would be included in both of those situations that we need to consider when we buy insurance?
Yeah, there definitely is. They're both property insurance, or they're both very similar. You go to any agent or company that you find that's licensed to buy them. So as far as that's very similar. And some of the coverages are similar, some are different. So I can get into how they're similar and how they're different.
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful. How about how first, the similarities between the policies for renting and owning?
Yeah, for sure. So if you rent or you own, you're going to have personal property. I think of it as if you take your house and you turn it upside down, everything that falls out is your personal property. So think your clothes, your TV, your couches, the stuff that hangs on the wall, your rugs. So that's the stuff that's very similar between renters and home. Because if you're renting, you're not owning the property that you live in, the structure itself. If you own a home, then you are also paying for the structure itself. So the similarity is your personal property that goes in the rental or in your own home. So the clothes, that type of thing. And if you think about how much you have, we recommend home inventories, and we can talk about home inventories later, but a lot of people don't know the extent of the value of the stuff they have. I mean, just think of your $2,000 TV, your $100 pair of jeans. You start adding that up, and you think, wow, if my apartment was flooded, I'm going to lose all that stuff potentially, or if there's a fire, and goodness, I want that stuff to be covered. So regardless of if you rent or you own a home, you're still going to have personal property that you probably want to insure.
Have you found that most people undervalue the personal property they have in their home?
I would definitely think so. And I know I personally have, because I don't know. I mean, I probably have, I would say 10 pairs of jeans, but if I go home, I probably have 20. I mean, I probably don't really know. Under my cabinet, I might have, 20 bottles of nail polish. Maybe there's 40. I mean, I think so. And then, just the stuff I buy every day, my trips to Walmart and Target. I mean, just thinking of that stuff. So I definitely think that people probably undervalue. And that's another thing with insurance. You don't want to be underinsured, but you don't want to be overinsured either. So you don't want to think, I'm living a good life. I have, $50,000 worth of personal property, because your insurance company is going to charge you for that. Right. When in reality, you might only have $20,000 worth of personal property. So it goes both ways. You don't want to be underinsured, but you don't want to be overinsured and just waste money.
Now, are you referring to over and under as being, say, we're talking about personal property now.
Yes.
So there is the personal property issue, which we may get back to a little bit later on in our discussion. What are some of the other similarities within policies for both renters and homeowners?
There's two more that come to mind. One of them is liability coverage. So regardless of if you rent a home or if you own a home, if someone comes onto your property, they trip on a rug, they break a leg in your house, either rented or owned, that's liability coverage. And that would be covered under a renter's policy or a homeowner's policy. So that liability coverage, I mean, imagine if your friend broke their leg and you didn't have any kind of coverage and they wanted to come back and sue you to pay for their medical bills. I mean, you know, medical bills, those can add up really fast. So liability coverage is definitely similar between renters and homeowners. There's one other I can think of, and it's called additional living expenses. And that's a jargon term, but it's one that your insurance agent would know when you talk to them. But additional living expenses are if you have a flood or a fire in your house, either rented or owned, and you have to leave because you need to make repairs, say you're getting all new floors because your house was flooded. So additional living expenses are covered under your policy if you have that covered. So they would pay for you to stay in an apartment. They would pay for some food expenses, things like that. So that's called additional living expenses that would probably be covered under your renters and your home. And that's something regardless of if you rent or you own.
So if I go into an agent, and whether I am renting or owning my own home, these are three areas that I definitely want to make sure that whatever policy I purchase is going to cover at least these three areas. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Yeah, those are probably the big similarities between the three. And then, of course, the homeowners, you want to cover the structure itself. So there are a couple additional coverages in homeowners that you wouldn't get in renters just because you're not covering our structure in renters. But, yeah, I think those are the three basic.
And they would be the structure. How about another if I own my home? Is there something that's peculiar to that type of policy as opposed to a renter's policy?
I think another thing is other structures. So if you have a detached garage, that wouldn't be covered under the structure, the dwelling policy. It would be the same policy, excuse me. It wouldn't be the same coverage. So you'd have the structure coverage on the house itself. And then if you have a detached garage or, you know, a workshop or another building, you'd have other structure coverage that's within your homeowner. So there's just different types of structure coverage under your homeowners that are a little different.
Let's, if we might, let's go back and talk a little bit more about the first three, i.e. the similarities between renters and homeowners insurance policies and the things that should be considered in that. One of the things with respect to the personal property matter would be inventory. Many of our listeners, as you know, are visually disabled, so they're going to have someone with them. Should that be a family member? Should that be a professional inventory person that takes inventory? What would you suggest in who would do the inventory?
I think anyone who's willing to give you their time. It doesn't have to be a professional. There's really nothing professional that, you know, a licensed person would need to put into it. And we tell people it could be as basic as going around and taking pictures of your home. Open your closets, open your cabinets, go into your garage. So it could be basic as taking pictures, taking videos. You don't necessarily have to write anything down. It would be great if you wrote everything down. Mm-hmm. So if that person wants to go through and write down, you know, TV, 60 inches, bought in 2014, bought for $2,000, serial number, those types of things are great. But if you just take pictures, I mean, just something to jog your memory if you should have a claim. So it can be very basic or it could be detailed, but it doesn't require a professional to put together.
In these policies, is there a certain personal property that's excluded always from coverage in these policies, or are they pretty much blanket on all of your personal property in your home?
For most basic things, if you have jewelry, a lot of people know that there's an endorsement for like a wedding ring. So if you have expensive items, that's when you might need to get an endorsement. We call it an endorsement. Again, that's another jargon word. But it's just something you would add on to your policy to cover expensive items. Mm-hmm. So expensive items, maybe that's jewelry. Maybe if you're a professional photographer, that's your photo equipment. If you're a professional developer, maybe it's computer equipment. So think expensive things, antiques, things like that probably wouldn't be covered under, you know, a basic $20,000 policy, because if you had $50,000 worth of computer equipment, you know, that would blow the $20,000 out of the water and you wouldn't have money to replace your jeans or your TV. So think expensive items. And those are things you definitely need to tell your agent if you have, because your agent's not going to know. You have to tell them, oh, I have $20,000 worth of regular stuff, but I also have this, you know, antique art collection. And if that were to get flooded, you'd be in trouble. So think expensive items, the things that probably wouldn't be covered under that regular policy.
How often should you do an inventory?
I would think every year. I try to do one every year. And
we accumulate, I do.
Yes.
We accumulate a lot of things, and all, it's very easy to overlook something that is value or that its value is increasing, and we leave it out of the inventory.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if you could, ideally, if you had like an Excel spreadsheet, ideally, if you went out to Best Buy and bought a new TV, you would go home, you would write down the day you bought it, you would keep the receipt, you would keep the serial number. So ideally, you would update it if you bought any big ticket item. But, you know, is that going to happen? So maybe every 6 months, every year, go update.
What if you don't have an inventory and something happens to the home you rent or own, and you've got the personal property in there, but you don't have an inventory, and unfortunately you can't really prove what personal property you have in there? How does this impact the policy or the claim that you may make for personal property?
Right. I think the number one thing is probably going to slow you down, because they're probably going to ask your agent when you file that claim, is probably going to ask, okay, you said everything in your house was destroyed by that fire. Now prove it. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, I have to start from ground zero pretty much. So I'm thinking to myself, I've got to go write all this stuff down. So number one, it's going to affect your claim, because if you had that inventory already, the agent says, oh, I need your home inventory. You could email it to them in 30 minutes. And then they could process your claim. They could pay you. You could start replacing your items. You could get back on the road to recovery. But if you're going to have to take a week, 2 weeks, just to rack your brain to remember what you had in your house, it's going to take you that much longer to get that check from the insurance company.
Now, that can really add difficulty to the claim process, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, we do have renter's policies. And that renter's policy will cover personal property. Are there some things that our listeners need to be aware of when someone is trying to sell them this type of a policy? Are there, have you had problems in this area from the standpoint of agents doing something that they shouldn't be doing when they sell insurance that includes personal property coverage?
I think it would just be our general tips that we give anyone buying any kind of insurance. We have some general tips that apply to just about anything. And I would think number one, make sure you're buying from a licensed company or agent. You want to make sure who you're buying from is legit, is going to be able to pay your claims. That's right. The biggest thing. If you're paying someone, you know, $100 a month, you want to be sure when you have a claim. And there are scrupulous agents out there who take money and never pay claims. So I think there are some general tips that we give people for buying insurance.
And certainly they can call the Department of Insurance if they have questions about these kinds of things. And I'll ask you several times if you don't mind, but what is a good contact number for one of our listeners if they just throw their hands up and say, I've just got to have some questions answered about my policy or my agent or the insurance company that's supposedly covering me because I don't recognize this insurance company's name? What is a number that they can call here?
Our helpline is 1-800-252-3439. Our helpline is open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, and you can get someone on the phone pretty quickly, I think 2 or 3 minutes. We've been written up about that, so we're pretty proud of our... You actually get to talk to a live person.
Excellent.
Yeah, and these are experts. These are insurance experts. Don't feel bad about any questions you have. Nothing is off limits. Call, ask them. They know their stuff, so don't hesitate to call if you have any questions. They will for sure help you out. They're great people.
Good. That sounds good. Do all companies have to register in the state of Texas to sell insurance in Texas or to underwrite insurance in Texas, or are some of them excluded from coverage under the Texas laws?
All agents, adjusters, and insurance companies that sell insurance in Texas have to have our license. They go through us. There's training they have to take. There's fees they have to pay to us to get that license. And that means that we watch them. We watch them to make sure that they still have enough money. We watch their complaint record. We can tell people that on the website or on the phone how many complaints the companies have. So if they're licensed, it means we have a lot of information about them that we can help you make a good decision.
Another one of the other issues that are common to both renters and homeowners policy is the second one that you brought up earlier, and that is liability issues. Tell us a little bit more about how we make sure that the policy that we have will adequately insure us against the potential liability for anyone that gets hurt in our home, whether we rent it or own it.
You have your renter's or your homeowner's policy. It covers someone else's injury. So someone comes into your property, trips on your front doorstep, say your dog bites someone on your property, that type of thing. If it's your home, it would be covered under your health insurance. If it's you on the property, you hurt yourself, that's not covered under your homeowner's insurance. That would be covered under your health insurance. So it's usually someone else coming onto your property. You know, think someone who would sue you if they didn't have enough money to pay for whatever injury they incurred on your property. Your dog bit them, and they have, you know, medical bills. So liability is really to cover you so you don't get sued if someone else is hurt. Yes, it is included in the policy, in your homeowner's policy. It's one of the standard coverages in the renter's as well. But there's a caveat that you always want to be sure. You want to ask your agent when you're buying that policy, does it cover my personal property? Does it cover liability? You just want to be sure. I mean, there could be some unscrupulous companies out there who are going to leave it out. They're going to charge you a super low premium. I mean, this is probably pretty rare, but we just want to be sure that you're getting the coverages you pay for. So it should be one of your standard coverages when you're buying a renter's or a homeowner's policy, but you want to ask your agent. You want to be completely sure you're getting the coverages that you're paying for. And read your policy. Have someone read it to you. Look at it. Make sure that the coverages that you're paying for are in that policy.
There was a third category that you mentioned that's common to both renters and homeowners insurance. Was that was additional?
Additional living expenses.
Yes.
It's also called loss of use. Again, these are jargon words. I'm not really sure of a plain language way to put it, but additional living expenses. So that would be, if, like I said, if you had a flood or some reason that you'd need to move out of your property to get repairs made, they would pay for hotel. I mean, reasonable hotel. Reasonable amount of food. They're not going to pay for you to eat out every night, but if you cook from home, they realize that if you're in a hotel, you're probably going to be eating out. So it's a reasonable amount of hotel charges, food, if you need some clothes on your back because you lost everything, things like that. That's what's covered.
With respect to the issue where I'm renting my home, what should I expect my landlord to have by way of insurance when I rent an apartment or rent a home?
When it comes to renter's insurance, whatever policy the landlord has isn't going to protect the renter. It's just going to pay for the structure. So in that respect, I mean, it is the place you're living in temporarily while you're renting it. So if you did have to move, that would be an inconvenience on you, but it wouldn't really cost you anything. Say there was smoke damage to the walls, that would be something that the landlord would have covered under their policy. So they would cover the structures, they would cover things in the parking lot, they would be responsible for those things. So there's not really much overlap between a renter's policy and the landlord's structure policy, other than the fact that you're living in the house and you would have to leave if something happened to it, but the landlord would pay for that. So there's not really a whole lot of overlap in cost, I guess, between the two. But if you want to ask your landlord, do you have insurance on the structure? I would hope they would. I can't imagine any apartment complex would not have insurance. But if you want to ask them if they do, definitely do so.
One of the things that we always hear a lot about is, especially after we've had an emergency, people come in, contractors from everywhere, and they want to repair your home. What should our listeners watch out for when these people approach them? I mean, are they supposed to have insurance coverage when they do that, or does the insurance department run into problems with respect to these people that want to repair? They come in from everywhere.
We have an insurance fraud department that's made up of peace officers. And insurance fraud is a huge deal, and contractor fraud is a really big deal.
Contractor.
So the roofers,
yes.
Someone comes out to put on a new roof, they're repairing your bathroom, they're putting down new floors. And roofers aren't licensed in the state of Texas. Contractors aren't. So you think, okay, a doctor, a lawyer, an insurance agent, there's a license for that. But there's not for contractors. There's not a state agency that licenses contractors. So that's when you run into the big problem. Because with insurance companies, we tell you, oh, come to TDI. We'll tell you if they're licensed. We'll tell you if they have a good complaint record. But contractors, there's really nowhere to go for that. So that's why a lot of them are unscrupulous. And it does affect insurance. That's where the Texas Department of Insurance and our fraud unit comes in, because we're trying to protect these insurance consumers from getting this insurance check, you know, $10,000 to replace a roof. They hand it over to an unscrupulous agent they've never seen before because they have nowhere to go to check the license. And that that contractor, that roofer, runs off with all their money. That affects insurance fraud. Homeowners' payments of people all around the state go up. So it affects everyone when there's contractor fraud. So we do have, like I said, in our insurance department, we have a catastrophe response team. And what they'll do is they'll go out after really big storms, and they'll go around to cities and counties, and they'll say, hey, city, do you have any kind of registration program? Because even though the state doesn't license contractors, cities and counties can require registrations. It's not necessarily a license, but it's a registration. So if you come into their city, they would say, we want you to have this registration. We want to know what kind of insurance you have. So cities and counties can do this. There's nothing legally binding about it, but you want to be sure when you get that roofer, maybe call your city or county and say, do you have a list of everyone who has a registration with you? And after a storm, we try to tell you to go with someone local, you know, ask your friends who they used for a roof, talk to some people, maybe get some recommendations. But after a storm, like in Houston, huge storms, there's going to be people coming from out of state. And that's okay, because there's so much work. You might not be able to get, you know, your best friend's brother to put on your roof. So you might have to get someone from out of your area. So we just want you to be sure, check with the city, county, sometimes a Better Business Bureau will have information on these companies. So there's steps that homeowners can take to protect themselves. But in the end, it is hard.
It can be a very difficult issue. Let me ask you about this. One of the things we always hear about with respect to homeowners' policies is flood insurance. How does one go about determining if their policy adequately covers them for floods?
I think the number one thing is to probably call your agent. If you don't know for sure, if you don't have that flood insurance policy in front of you, you want to call your agent and say, I know I have homeowners policy, but do I have a flood policy as well? Because in Texas, a lot of people don't know this, some people do, that your homeowners policy does not cover flood. So flood is an excess of water on normally dry land, rising waters. So think of those two things. Your homeowner's policy does not cover that. Your homeowner's policy will cover a fire. They'll cover a theft. They'll cover smoke damage, but they won't cover flood. So it's a separate policy that you have to buy, and a lot of people don't know that.
What about wind?
Yeah, same thing. On the Gulf Coast, there's 14 counties along our Gulf Coast, and in those counties, wind and hail would not be covered. If you live inland, like Austin, Dallas, then you would have coverage for wind and hail. But if you live along the Gulf Coast, a lot of people call it hurricane insurance, but it's wind and hail insurance, and you can only buy it through the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association. That's regulated by the state, so we know what they're doing. We call it TWIA for short. So along the Gulf Coast, you would buy a separate policy for TWIA. Like I said, if you live in Austin or Dallas, wind and hail would be covered on your homeowner's policy. So if you live on the Gulf Coast, you could potentially have three different types of insurance. You could have your homeowner's policy, a flood insurance policy, and then that TWIA wind and hail policy.
How about claims? If, you know, with respect to either renting or owning your own home, are there any points that you think you would provide our listeners with respect to making a claim, and how long, you know, these things should take before they get concerned about whether their claim is being processed correctly? Or there's an issue with respect to paying the claim.
I think the number one tip we would say if you have a claim is to tell your company as soon as you can. Because it's your insurance company. Yeah. Call your agent, call your insurance company. Tell them as soon as you can if you have something that concerns you, if you have hail damage. So that'd be the number one thing, is just to get started as soon as possible, because the company is not going to be able to help you until they know about your claim. And then it does take a while. There are days and statutes, and we could tell you these on the consumer helpline if you're concerned about days. but there are certain deadlines in Texas insurance code that companies have to follow. So a certain number of days after you file a claim, they have to respond to you. A certain number of days after that, if they ask you for your home inventory and you give it to them, they have a certain number of days to tell you if they're going to accept or reject your claim. And then after that, there's another certain number of days until they pay your claim once they've decided that they're going to accept it. So there are protections for consumers to make sure you're not, you know, just languishing there for days.
One final question. Are there, with respect to these types of policies, renters and homeowners, have you seen scams with respect to people that are trying to sell these policies to people? Are there any catchwords or phrases or something that some of our listeners should watch out for when they're considering purchasing one of these policies? Is the best protection to get a reference for a good agent?
Yeah, and I think getting references, that's probably a really good thing to do if you know that someone else is using a certain agent or company. Maybe someone comes to your door and they say, oh, I have this insurance policy. If someone just cold calls you over the phone, you're not even looking for a policy, but someone calls you and you answer the phone and they say, I have a renter's insurance policy I want to sell you. I think you just need to be really careful about those type of people. So if you don't go to someone, if you don't call a company, if you don't call an agent, if that person comes to you, not necessarily that they're a bad person, but I would be really concerned. I would definitely want to call the Department of Insurance, get their name, get their number, make sure they have a license. And then once they do, if you do get that person on your door, on your phone, and you do want to follow them to the next step because you think they're offering a really good deal, then make sure they're licensed. Look at their complaint history. People can file complaints about companies, agents, and adjusters with TDI. So if they have a really high complaint record, and we can tell you that, we can tell you how many complaints have been filed against them in the last year, 2 years, 5 years. And if they have a lot of complaints filed against them, I would say, maybe I want to go with someone else. So that's the number one thing. Make sure they're licensed. Number two, look at their complaint history. And I think using those two things, I think you can make a pretty good judgment call. But I would also look at really low premiums. If someone is saying a homeowner's insurance policy is going to cost you $800, and then someone calls you on the phone and says, oh, I could sell you a policy for $200, I would think I'd be a little bit suspect about that, and I would say
red flags.
Yeah. So there's some really big red flags. If that policy is just dirt cheap, you think, what are you covering? You know, ask them. Maybe send me, what are you going to be covering? Send me something in the mail that shows me what you're going to be covering, and I might just shy away from anything like that anyway.
We would like to have that phone number again.
Oh, sure, sure.
The helpline number.
Yes. Again, the helpline number is 1-800-252-3439. Call us if you have any questions or complaints. There's another thing I might add, that when you're filing that claim, if you're not happy with the way your insurance company is treating you, if you don't think they're paying you what you're owed on any kind of damage that you have, we would give you a couple tips. I think we would tell you, first, go to the insurance company. Insurance companies, most of the time, are good people. So call them and say, hey, I don't think you're giving me enough money to replace the roof, to replace, you know, my kitchen sink, whatever it is that damaged. A lot of times they might send an adjuster back out. They might look at it again. They might look at the contractor's estimate, maybe have the contractor there and say, hey, contractor, hey, insurance adjuster, you know, can we come up with another settlement and another negotiation? So I think there are some things you can do for yourself if you're not happy with the way you're being treated. Go to your insurance company first. You can use the appraisal program, and then you could file a complaint with us, and we can help you get with your insurance company to make sure you're being treated fairly.
I have a question about that. If an adjuster shows up at your door, should you ask for some type of identification or to make sure that he or she is who they say they are?
I think that'd be great for anyone who comes to your door, regardless of what they're selling. Yeah, ask them for their ID if they have a company ID. They should. Mm-hmm. I would imagine any adjuster would have a company ID. If you're really concerned, hopefully your agent or whoever you're talking to at the company would tell you, you know, so-and-so is coming to your house at 2 o'clock. This is their name. You know, just check their driver's license maybe to make sure that their name matches up with what the company gave you. So I think just protecting yourself for sure when anyone comes on your property is a good idea.
This has been extremely helpful, and I and our listeners and would like to thank you, Misty, for providing this valuable information and for taking the time today to do so. Thank you very much. Once again, thank you to Misty Hynote from the Texas Department of Insurance in Austin for taking the time out of her busy schedule to provide us with such valuable information. To contact the Texas Department of Insurance Helpline, please call 1-800-252-3439 and please call during regular business hours. That's 1-800-252-3439. If you missed any portion of this program or would just like to hear it again, you can download it at our podcast page at sightintosound.org. If you would like a copy of this program on CD or an email link, please call Sight Into Sound at 713-622-2767. That's 713-622-2767. Sight Into Sound Presents is a production of Sight Into Sound Radio, Houston, Texas. I'm Max Mowdy.